I'm Stan Kenton. I'm the piano player and I'm the leader. The guys call me the old man. They look to me for many things. A plan, final decisions, encouragements, and oh yes, another thing. Money. With high regard and respect for each other's individuality, the ingredients in the variety of a group of personalities can make a music wide in scope, from tender soft sounds to screaming crashing distance. This is an orchestra!
The voice and music of the late Stan Kenton. 9:44 is our WXYZ time, and as promised, on the line with us, we have Dick Shearer, who for years was the first trombone, road manager, and assistant director of the Stan Kenton Band, now based in Detroit. Dick, are you there?
Yes, I am, David. What a wonderful tribute that was.
Thank you. I really hoped you would appreciate it, you in particular, Dick, and I'm glad that you did.
That's the first Kenton album I ever bought.
Yeah, and it still knocks me out. It really does. Tell me this, the Stan Kenton that we hear on that cut, was he substantially the same in your years with him? Was it the same kind of fire and enthusiasm and all the rest of it?
Oh, very much. Even more, because, you know, we were so involved with the kids later on, with the educational programs, the clinics, and the things we did. He was so enthusiastic about that.
How long were you associated with Kenton, Dick?
Close to 13 years.
Yes, it's been a long time. In fact, the so-called last Kenton bands lasted for a very long time, with some changes in personnel.
Yes.
What is the origin of that whole business, the last band in 70 or 71? Kenton was referring to this as the last Kenton road band.
We officially went back on the road around early 1970 as a full-time band. Before that, we'd go out for periods of maybe 3 months at a time and take 3 or 4 months off and go out 3 months again.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1970, we decided we'd go out full-time, and we did. We'd be out 50 weeks a year.
Yeah, but what I mean is, Kenton himself during that era was referring to this as the last Kenton band.
I think what he was saying was when this... that period of time, it's like saying that Woody with his third hurt, fourth hurt, 18th hurt,
whatever it is, right?
This is what Stan wanted to do, and he wanted to keep the band going for an X amount of time period as a full-time band.
What was your attitude toward life on the road, Dick?
Oh, I spent 13 years there. I loved it very much. I enjoyed the people I met, the musicians. I loved being with him.
Mm-hmm.
I learned a tremendous amount about the business. You know, I'm very fortunate that I had the chance to front that orchestra on many occasions.
In fact, as I mentioned before we got on here, I sat behind you, and Willie Maiden was there, Baron Von Ohlen, Stan was there. This is in a coffee shop on Ontario Street. I can't remember the hotel, Ontario and Michigan, and your hotel was about a block away on Ohio Street, as I recall.
Sounds like the old Eastgate Hotel.
That's it, yeah. And... Barrett Deems, the drummer formerly with Benny Goodman, was kind of down on his luck and kind of wandering around the street. Stan Kenton saw him, got up, called him in. Did you happen to be there then?
I do remember that now.
Remember that night?
That's right.
You remember that? It's going back to about 1971.
71.
And the grace and generosity of the man that I saw in that encounter has knocked me out to this day. You know, his eyes were sort of swiveling, and he just happened to see Barrett Deems, who didn't look... very impressive at that moment. Had been, I think, on the beach for a number of months.
Right.
The Dixieland gig that he had in Chicago had folded maybe a year before, and called him in, and it was like old times all over again.
Oh, yeah, I've seen him do so many things like that with guys.
Yeah. Was he universally respected, would you say?
Very much so. Very much. He was one of the gentlemen.
Mm-hmm.
Our business.
None of our business, perhaps, but the angle emerges in the obit which appears in today's Free Press, which also mentions you, Dick. The alleged unhappiness of Stan's private life, his marriages, the problem with his son in recent years, and so on. What was that all about? Did you have any theory on that?
No, not really. It just was, I think, it was just a couple of bad choices.
Mm-hmm.
He always considered his last marriage as a crime that he committed. And he wanted to try to, you know, set up a home and stuff for the kids where they'd have a family again.
Right.
And it just, unfortunately, it just didn't work out.
Mm-hmm. I understand that down through the years, Stan Kenton had a number of groupies, male and female, who followed the bands. non-musicians, most of them, people who would abandon home and career for months at a time to follow Stan.
We had one gentleman out of Philadelphia, and he would spend his whole summer vacation following the band. We'd have people, especially when we'd go to Europe,
mm-hmm.
you know, we'd be over in Great Britain in, say, 3 or 4 weeks, we'd have people that would take their whole holidays around where the band was going. And they'd always find out what hotel the band was in, and they'd book themselves into the hotel and go to all the jobs. You know, they always paid their own way.
Right.
You know, it wasn't a matter of them just getting on the bus and having a free ride. And they'd follow us around for a couple of months.
Now, what is that? What is that incredible dedication that people had towards Stan Kenton? And why him and not other bands? For example, Woody Herman does not inspire the same kind of loyalty, I don't think.
Well, it's because of the way that the band was. It's like, you know, we talked about with Barrett, you know.
Right.
Walking out of his way, coming and say, come on, come in here. You know, I've seen him do that time and time again to people, and they were just, he made everybody feel very comfortable.
What was he in any sense authoritarian or demanding with the musicians? By the way, how do you audition, or how did you audition for the Stan Kenton Band?
Well...
And how demanding was he in the audition?
The auditions, well, we never really had any formal auditions. You know, when I took over the position with the orchestra, it was always my job, one of my duties was to hire the guys.
Mm-hmm.
We always had an agreement that says, I will hire them, but you got to fire them. He said, oh, okay, I got to be the bad guy. I said, yeah, right. You got to be the bad guy. And what we'd do, we'd usually ask guys in the band, like I'd go to the first trumpet player, and he says, listen, one of the guys is leaving, we have a trumpet opening. Who would you like? Who do you know? And he says, well, I know this little guy from Watch Here, Iowa, or someplace, and he plays very good. I said, would you like to have him in the section? He said, yes, I would. I said, well, give me his number and I'll call him.
What kind of experience would a young musician have to have in order to join the Kenton Band? Would he have to have big name band experience, or could he be from some more modest background?
No. A lot of the guys really didn't have any big band experience, so to speak. They just had to be good players.
And you had to be an ensemble player. Now, I would think the requirements of the Stan Kenton Band are much more demanding than what a young musician would have encountered until then. Do they ever freak or freeze or lose
it? Oh, many a time. You know, we've had that happen on a lot of occasions, especially, you know, the curtain would open up and you'd be out there and you'd see 5,000 people. And it always seemed like when a new guy would join the band, he'd always have to join in a concert situation.
Right.
You know, and he'd... All of a sudden, he'd be there, he'd show up and say, we were in Chicago, and we'd try to go over the book a little bit with him. But outside of that, you know, we didn't have any rehearsals, so to speak, with the new players, and all of a sudden, he's on the concert stage. Now, when a guy left the band, it seemed like we were always playing some turkey dance job somewhere.
Right.
It happened for years.
9 minutes to 10, we're talking about the late, great Stan Kenton with Dick Shearer, first trombonist, former road manager, and assistant director of the Stan Kenton Band. Our number here is 353-1270. Hang on, Dick, we have to pause for just a moment. Coming right back.
I am the music. I am the rain. I'll be good for your system. I am the rain.
You're buying Marantz Home and Car Stereo Components. You're buying a name you can live with, depend upon, and trust to help you relieve the pressures of the day. Take the chill off cold nights. Keep your company when you're all alone. Or kick up your heels when you feel like dancing. When you buy Marantz, you're getting a system that's built to be good for your system for a long time to come. Highland Appliance can show you exactly what they mean.
Seven minutes to 10, weather mostly cloudy and foggy, occasional light drizzle overnight, low about 60, becoming partly cloudy Tuesday with a slight chance of afternoon thundershowers, the high in the upper 70s. Currently 67 degrees, talking with Dick Shearer, first chair trombone with the Stan Kenton Band, talking about Stan, who died this weekend. We'll take a call for him on WXYZ Talk Radio. This is David Newman. Hello.
Hi, David.
Hi, who's this?
Rudy.
Hi, Rudy.
Okay, we want to talk about political prisoners tonight. Remember me?
No, I don't, in all honesty, Rudy, but...
Talking about Stan.
Yeah.
That is also my favorite record that you played.
Really?
I remember it, you know, because I was in the service and he played it. But as Dave Shearer was saying about his international reputation...
Right.
When I was in England, you know, the American musicians were barred out of the U.K. So Stan's band had to go to Ireland to play the concert.
Mm-hmm.
Like all the trains would be leaving London. I was stationed in the London area on their way to Ireland just to catch the band when it would play a concert over there. And the guys were coming from France, and you know, and these were musicians, not only camp followers, but you know, musicians like the whole half the Ted Heath Orchestra,
right?
Jenny Dankworth and his group, and
right?
And the Pierre Michelot and all the guys from France.
Mm-hmm.
All go up there just to hear Stan and his band play. And another thing I like to mention while I'm here is that, you know, he filled such a void, you know, when Count Basie did not have a band.
That's right.
And, you know, Stan's band was going strong. You had Stan and Duke. That's all you had.
That's it.
And if you wanted to go, you know, it was nothing to go 60, 70 miles to a dance or to a concert.
People forget that Woody Herman was inactive for large numbers of those years, too.
Woody and Count were kind of inactive.
That's right.
And you had two big bands. If you liked the music, you know, you had to go and you paid the price, and you didn't mind paying the price because you knew it was going to be well worth it when you went there. And I think that's a tribute to him, you know, other than the workshops and other things that I understand he did, you know, in later years.
Well done, Rudy. Any thoughts, Dick?
Yeah, but 49, 50, 51, up to 60, you know.
Right.
It was such a beautiful thing to have the guy around and to see him give a lot of musicians chances and to let him work it out. I recall when he fired Shelly Mann.
Mm-hmm.
Hired Shelly Mann back, you know.
Right.
And they had the picture and downbeat of him, you know, chopping the wood, right?
Right, yeah. Right.
Yeah, you remember that?
Yeah.
So, you know, we just lost another good fella.
That's it.
That's the way I feel about it.
Thank you, Rudy.
Let you know, okay?
Beautiful. 4 minutes to 10 with Dick Shearer, late of the Stan Kenton Band. Stan died this weekend. 353-1270, remembering Stan Kenton. We'll take another call on Talk Radio. This is David Newman. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah.
My name is Greg Adamus. I'm a member of Local 5, Detroit Federation of Musicians.
Hi, Greg.
Hi. I'd like to say hello to Dick. I don't know if he remembers me. He did a clinic for Olivet College in the last summer.
Yes, I do.
A very fine job. Two things. I just wanted to have Dick relate to all the listeners. I was over at his apartment, and he showed me what he did with his horn that he used with Kenton down the road when he finally left the Kenton Band. I think it's a very amusing story on where his horn is and what it's doing. I wonder if Dick could say a few things about this.
Let's hear it, Dick.
Well, I had a horn that I played for quite a few years, and I always said when I would leave the Kenton Band, I would retire the horn. You know, the horn has probably been, I've flown a million miles, and I've been overseas about 18, 19 times, and this horn has been everywhere. So I said, when I leave the band, I'd hang the horn up on the wall, which is what I did. And I've got the horn hanging up in my... I had it in my apartment for a while, and I had some little ivy growing in it.
Perfectly good trombone.
Oh, yes. But I always said I would do that. That was just my little... Let the horn have a rest. The horn had a good life.
Yeah. Neatly done.
Can I ask one more question?
Sure, Greg.
I don't know if Dick knows the answer, but it's always been a curiosity to me. What was Stan Kenton's nationality?
Kenton was basically from Welsh and English ancestry.
Yeah, Kenton was his name. He's from Missouri or someplace?
He was born in Wichita.
Kansas, that's it.
Right.
Okay.
Wonderful. Thank you very much for the opportunity to talk.
Thank you, Greg. 3 minutes to 10, 353-1270 with Dick Shearer, who was the assistant director and former road manager of the Stan Kenton Band, in addition to being first chair trombone. What about people who let Art down over the years? I understand, I was thinking of Art Pepper, that's why I said Art. I understand it was a major disappointment to Stan Kenton that Art Pepper tumbled the way he did. I know that's a number of years ago and before your era with the band.
What do you mean by humbled? You know, Art had problems with... Well, he had some problems with...
Oh, yes, indeed, which is what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Stanley was disappointed in that. You know, he had some... Well, some drug-related problems.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of let himself go, and he was always disappointed in that because Art was... Art is... still one of the great saxophone players we have.
Yeah, so I guess lots of musicians down through the years, or a number of musicians, went through the same kind of agony, and that must have been a particular torture to Stan Kenton.
Oh, it always is. You know, the jazz people seem to have gone through this in the early 50s, you know. Now we're living with the rock musicians are doing that.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting involved in those problems. Seem like they wouldn't learn their lesson from what we went through. Most of the guys today now, just especially in our field, it's, you haven't got time for that. This is a business.
Sure.
You know, and we are a business band. It's a small business. You consider yourself a horn player, but if you don't, to quote Willie Maiden, use the business terms like I have been, if you don't take care of business, you're out of business. There's too many other good players around now, especially with the kids that have been coming out of the colleges and universities. You know, they play so much better than the guys ever did in the big band era. It's incredible.
Are you still friendly with people from the band of a few years ago, like Baron Von Ohlen, like Mike Vax, like Jameson, like several others?
Very, very, very much. You know, I just got a note from Mike Vax. He just got married and had a baby. Baron, I see all the time. We were always very, very dear friends. You know, if you ever watched the band when we were together, we had an extreme eye contact going on all the time.
Yeah, yeah. That was a very cohesive, together band. It seemed like a happy band.
It was an extremely happy band. And then, you know, Willie Maiden, God rest his soul, you know, he was a big force in that band.
Yeah, in fact, I must have seen him around about the last time he appeared. I know he got sick a couple of years ago, and I saw him just before then.
Mm-hmm. He went on to teach up in University of Maine.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden he had the problem. You know?
Dick, can you stay with us a little longer? We're approaching news time. I have a few more questions for you, if you've got time for them.
I certainly do.
Hang on for 7 minutes. We're pausing for news coming up right now.
This Tom Hopkins.
But his real family and his real family orientation was toward the band.
Yes.
That any flesh and blood family's got to take a back seat to the man's primary orientation. That was his family. You were his family in a much more important sense. Does that make sense?
Yes, very much. Yes.
Art Pepper, speaking of Art Pepper, it occurs to me that Buddy Rich tried to rehabilitate Art Pepper years after the incident that caused his departure from Kenton's band and failed. The story is that Buddy Rich was playing in Vegas and needed an alto player, and he heard that Pepper was out of jail and sought him out, got him in the band. Pepper was just as ruined as ever, and the experiment lasted about a week.
When Art really got himself together was when he was involved with, you know, Synanon.
Yeah.
And that's where he really started the road to recovery.
What were Stan Kenton's own tastes in music, Dick?
Oh, he loved the classics. Ravel, the modern classics. He loved Ravel. Duke was very, very important. Anything that was done very well. Like he was involved very much in Wagner. He loved Wagner.
What do you make of the criticisms by Leonard Feather and others over the years that Kenton often veered away from jazz, that, for example, Bob Graetinger's influence on Stan Kenton, the walls of brass, polytonal sounds, are really associated with modernism in a classical sense and have very little to do with jazz, that Kenton, in other words, lost track of jazz at different periods of his life?
What does the term jazz mean to some people?
I don't know. It's a hard one to define.
You know, there were years ago when Paul Whiteman started his group, you know, it was called concert jazz, you know, and that offended a lot of people. Certain the jazz people don't consider Dixieland jazz. That's a jazz. That's, you know, the beginning of our foundation.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people wouldn't understand Louis.
Sure.
They wouldn't consider that jazz because Louis, later in his life, happened to do something like Hello, Dolly, or certain things like that. So what do they mean by jazz?
I don't know, but I guess if you're a cultural mucky-muck, if you're a tastemaker like Leonard Feather, you have a vested interest in preserving known outlines of jazz and setting yourself up as the authority of what is jazz and what is not.
Well, that's some of the problems we have with some of the critics.
One quote from Stan that made headlines a couple of years ago was the one in which Stan referred to country music as music for morons.
I am glad you asked me about
that. Well, tell me about that, Dick.
That thing was so misquoted. Some of Stanley's very dear friends were like Tex Ritter, Red Foley. He considered these people true artists.
Chet Atkins, I bet, belongs there, too.
Love Chet Atkins. But what he was always referring to was just some of this garbage that came out in the later years, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these tunes, there wasn't anything to them, and everybody was trying to capitalize on trying to make some little hit out of some simple thing.
Right.
You know, he loved the true country, the true, you know, country music.
Going back to Jimmy Rogers and the bluegrass tradition and so on.
That he loved very much, but it all got completely blown out of shape when he said that. There was never a mention of, you know, the album done with Tex Ritter. There was a thing one time where Charlie Rich bet him $10,000 that he couldn't do anything country. So we sent him a copy of the Tex Ritter album.
Which had already been done by that point, huh?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Done years ago, and his comment was, well, that's not really country.
Yeah, he tried to get out of it, huh?
Right. Here's Tex Ritter, who was one of the truly great gentlemen of the country western field.
Right. We're talking to Dick Shearer, former road manager, assistant director, and first trombone of the Stan Kenton Band, about the late Stan Kenton, who died this weekend. Our number here is 353-1270, and we take another call for Dick on WXYZ Talk Radio. This is David Newman. Hello.
Hello, David.
Hi, who's this?
Chris.
Hi, Chris.
I'm quite interested in your show tonight. I grew up in that band area, and I liked Stan Kenton music in about the 40s, in the late 40s.
Mm-hmm.
And my father was a musician, so I'm really, I really was quite interested. And he was a trumpet player that played all around this area and CKLW Windsor when they opened, and in the Boblo Dance Hall and the Boblo Boats. And,
right.
He wasn't with Tommy Dorsey, was he?
He's 78 years old, and he lives up north, and he still plays a pretty good trumpet today, as a matter of fact.
Dick asked you if he was with Tommy Dorsey, was he?
No, he wasn't. He just played around this area with different bands. He didn't like the traveling, and he finally gave it up for a while.
Uh-huh.
And then when he retired, he picked it up again and done it for, you know, just his own enjoyment and make some, you know, a few dollars. And he still plays quite well today. He plays up around Houghton Lake where he lives sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And, no, he played with some of the Lombardos before Guy Lombardo formed his own band. He played with his brother, one of the brothers, around London because we're from that area.
That's right. They're from London, aren't they?
Yeah, and we were from St. Thomas.
I see.
So he played with, you know, quite a few of those, so this is kind of fascinating to me.
Good.
But what I wanted to know was who, I can't place her name, the girl that sang with him that was so good.
The one he ended up marrying, you mean?
No, I don't know if he married her or not. I
June
can't
Christie?
Remember.
Probably June Christie, since...
It is, yes.
June Christie, yeah. But a better singer, in the opinion of lots of people, including myself, was Ann Richards. Unfortunately for Ann, her career was very short.
Yeah, I can't place her. I can't place her too well. I remember more June Christie, and I really liked her. And the other one, I can't quite... quite as much. I guess she probably didn't sing as long.
Of course, if you go back to the early 40s, you've got Anita O'Day, who I personally believe is the greatest white jazz female singer of all time.
I think she was, too. She was fantastic.
Yeah, I had a very unfortunate experience with her. I attempted to interview her, and it just went sour. She's rather embittered, and, I shouldn't generalize from my own experience, but I had a nasty encounter with Anita O'Day, which has not diminished my enthusiasm for her music.
So, because she sang on this show, she done two segments with Dick Cavett here on two nights they showed it, and you could hear it. She sang, and, you know, you enjoyed listening to her because you remembered how good she was. But she didn't sound the same. You could tell, you know, that. But she seemed to have some really bitter feelings. I got that through the show.
You did, huh?
Yes.
Yeah, so did I, very, very, very forcibly.
Problems, I think, so, you know, that she, I guess, overcame. But still, she seemed to be awfully bitter, too, that she wasn't considered as great as, like, Ella Fitzgerald, which probably is really the greatest.
Mm-hmm.
And many of them. She seemed to have these bitter feelings.
Well, the comparison, I think, that makes her even madder than that is that she is a slavish adherent of Billie Holiday, who learned everything that she ever did from Billie Holiday. Now, to an extent, that's true, in the same sense that Bird was the great influence on so many musicians who followed him, but but you can't lay it all at the feet of Billie Holiday, you know.
Well, anyway, I really enjoy your show. I enjoy this kind of a show talking about the music. This brings back a lot of good memories.
Me too.
Really fascinating. Thank you, David.
Thank you, Chris. 10:17 is our WXYZ time with Dick Shearer, formerly of the Stan Kenton Band, where he was assistant director and first trombone. Our number is 353-1270. We take another call for Dick on WXYZ Talk Radio. This is David Newman. Hello.
Hello, David.
Hi, who's this?
This is Mary.
Hi, Mary.
I think your guest, Dick, is thinking, when I heard him say something about a trumpet player and did he play with Tommy Dorsey, I was wondering if he was thinking of Chuck Peterson.
Yes, I was.
I knew my old, old, old friend. I'm old enough I can put that many olds in. In fact, his wife, I was just talking to her the other day. She lives near me, and we go back many, many, many years. And I guess you know Chuck passed away last year.
Yes, I do.
Yeah. He was one of, I think, probably the finest trumpet players that there ever was. You probably knew Kate by the name of Kay Foster.
Mm-hmm.
She sang with Tommy Dorsey for a while. And with Tony Pastor's band, and Chuck played with his band. And they've lived here in the Detroit area. I can't remember now how many years back, but he played on the Bob LeBoat. He played all the road shows, and he had a daughter, Chris.
Right.
Who,
yeah, he was here, I think, since about 1951.
Pardon?
I think he was here since about 1951.
Oh, wait. He came back to Detroit during the war and got a civilian job and played club dates around here and played the road shows. And it was his daughter, Chris, who stopped Ethel Merman cold during a production of Call Me Madam.
Really? How did she do that?
Well, she was a little kid and very musical. And she begged her dad, please, let me go to see this. And she knew all the tunes. She knew all the words. She was about, she couldn't have been more than eight. And her father said, no, he said, I can't do that. And she begged and begged. And he said, well, I'll tell you what I'll do. He said, I'll take you in the back door with the band. And he said, I'll put you down in the front row. And he said, I don't want you to make a move. I don't want you to say a word. I don't want you to look right or left. So she agreed. And he couldn't see her from where he was sitting, but I think there was a trombone player, as a matter of fact, who was able to see Chris.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, Chuck could realize that Ethel Merman was kind of breaking up a bit. And then it kept getting worse, and finally she just started missing lines and everything else. And Chuck nudged the fellow next to him. He says, take a look at Chris. What's she doing? And the fellow said, she's not doing a thing. He said, but every time there's something that she likes, she's just, you know that old okay where you put your thumb and your first finger together and you make a big O. And she was sitting there in the front row making these big O's, and Ethel Merman could see her in the front row.
Mm-hmm.
And it just broke her up.
Funny story. Thank you, Mary.
Okay.
1020 is our WXYZ time with Dick Shearer. Our number is 353-1270, talking about Stan Kenton. Getting back to the young musicians who joined the band over the years, Dick, how was it determined that they were effective enough as ensemble players to play with Kenton? If they had played in small combos or in college organizations or wherever it was, how was it known that they could play with Ken?
Usually we would hear them. We would hear them in some situation, either with the school band or one of the guys in the band had heard them. And we would take it from there. We'd say, well, let's give this guy a chance.
And you would know from hearing him interact with other musicians, even in a kind of an amateur get-together?
Sure. You'd always know that.
And there's one thing that occurs to me about the world of top-flight jazz instrumentalists, as in the Stan Kenton Band, that there's much more room for youth and much less dues to be paid in terms of traveling with the best than in almost any other field. If you are good enough, even as a youngster, you can be with Stan Kenton.
That's right.
Or could be, I should say.
That's right. The band, Woody's a good example now. The average age of his band, I think, is around 24, 25. When I left Stan's band, I think the average age of our band was around 30.
Mm-hmm.
We had a much older band.
The cut that we heard, Prologue, which was recorded in September 52, included a number of veterans who I guess were well over 30, but he talked about Vinnie Dean, the veteran first chair alto. I happened to look up Vinnie Dean in the Encyclopedia of Jazz, and at the time, he must have been no more than 25.
None of them were. They were all young guys. Maynard was 19, 20 years old.
Mm-hmm.
It was just one of that magic combination of players. They were the cream of the crop who was around. They were the best.
In fact, Buddy Childers had his 21st birthday around about that time. You're right. They all must have been in their very early 20s. With a few exceptions, like Bob Geoghegan must have been 30 or over, huh?
Well, Bob was. He was like the old...
Because he goes back to the days of Balboa, but he's about the only one, huh?
Right.
1023 with Dick Shearer talking about the late Stan Kenton. We'll take another call for him on Talk Radio. This is David Newman. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Right. My name is Ralph.
Hi, Ralph.
And I have a question for Dick Shearer. At what time did Pete Rugolo and Stan Kenton get together? At what point?
It was sometime during toward the end of the war.
Uh-huh.
And Pete happened to show up at the Hollywood Palladium. Somebody says, hey, take a chance on this guy. He's a pretty good little writer. So they had a rehearsal.
Uh-huh.
And Stanley liked Pete's chart, but Pete, unfortunately, still had to go back and, you know, serve his time in the service. Then after the war, I believe it was around 46 or something, they got together. And that started that love affair, which lasted for years.
Very, very much so. I'm in my 30s, and my only exposure to Kenton was in the late 60s when he came to town.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to see him in person, I have a few cuts of him now.
Well, where
I often wonder when that union started about. Another question I have for you, Dick, is of the band Buffs and of the band books that I've seen, most of them are a Hollywood type with just a picture of a band or notations of who was in the band at the time. But has anyone actually done any research as to delve into the history and all the tangents that have gone off, like, well, we know the Maynard Ferguson, the Pete Rugolos, all the people in Stan Kenton's band. Has anyone ever documented these?
Yes, there were a couple of gentlemen from England, the name of Pete Venador, who was from Holland, and Michael Sparks, who was from England.
Uh-huh.
This is one group of collaborators that got together. Then there was another two guys, Dr. Sigmund Mueller from Vienna and Chris Perry from England.
Uh-huh.
And they both had come up with tremendous discographies on the band.
Uh-huh.
And some of them were published, are published.
Uh-huh.
They're pretty hard to find now, but they did a whole comprehensive thing on the band. You know, what was in the library at the time, what radio shows were done, all the record dates. It's really a wild thing to see.
Yes. I've never seen anything around as many stores as, or libraries that I've gone through.
By the way, Ralph, Carol Easton's biography, Straight Ahead, The Story of Stan Kenton, dates Pete Rugolo's first contact with Kenton as late 1944 in San Francisco after Gene Roland had left the band. Red Doris reminded Stan, she says, how about those arrangements that fella gave you in San Francisco, referring to a shy, horn-rimmed, bookish-looking private in the Army who approached Stan backstage at the Golden Gate Theater, shoved a half-dozen arrangements into his hand, I'm quoting, obviously, mumbled, if you don't ever get a chance to play these, I wish you would somehow send them back because it was a lot of work for me to copy them, and then disappeared into the night.
Close on the year.
Yeah,
you were very close. As they played through the first chart, Stan was incredulous. She says, my God, this man writes just the way I do. There began their relationship, says Carol Easton. Good book, by the way, for people to get hold of. I guess it's still in print. Straight Ahead, The Story of Stan Kenton.
That's one I will look up.
Yes, if you can find that, buy it, because they've had some problems with that. And they finally reprinted it again.
Oh, they did?
Yes.
Good. I wasn't too far wrong in saying it was still in print. In fact, it's once again in print.
There's a gentleman, I can't remember his name right now. I think it's Dr. Bill Lee down in Florida, who's doing a new book on Stan.
I'd love to see that.
Yeah, sounds very good. I have another question, if I may.
Sure, Ralph.
Okay, unrelated to Stan Kenton. The Ted Heath Band. Is it anymore?
No, Ted passed away a few years ago.
No one has...
Somebody, they still do some albums occasionally.
Uh-huh. Very good. Another one of my favorites from the era. I thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you for the call, Ralph. 1027, I guess it's Carol Easton's book. Maybe I heard it or read it somewhere else. There was a bus crash way back in the 50s,
right,
in which a lot of people were injured. Not too badly, but damagingly so for some people's mouths. Some people lost teeth and whatever. And Bobby Burgess, I think, was seen walking down the road with his trombone. I guess your former, what would you say, equivalent in the band, huh?
Bobby was
I've only had really two basic idols in my entire life. And one of them was Bobby Burgess with the Kenton Band, and the other one band we just talked about, which was Don Lusher with the Heath Band.
Bobby Burgess, by the way, does some great work on Light My Fire, a fantastic album of about 10 years ago by Woody Herman.
Right.
He joined the Herman Organization, I guess, round about that time. He must have been very young, too, because he can't be very old now.
Bobby was, I think, 24 when he joined the band. He's now in Stuttgart, Germany.
Is he really?
Working with one of the radio bands.
Anyway, Bobby Burgess, according to the story, was seen walking away, and Stan Kenton ran after him because there's the bus line along the side of the road, and Burgess is walking, and Kenton said, "Bobby, where are you going?" He said, "No more, Stan. This is it. I can't take this anymore. No more road life. I'm leaving. That's it. Bye."
Yeah, he couldn't get on a bus for a lot of years after that.
Really?
That affected him.
Other people were hurt in that crash, as I remember.
Yes.
Describe some of the pastimes on the road, Dick, in the bus, like pillaging, for example.
You talked to Von Olin. That's out of Carol's book.
Yeah, right.
This was the thing that Von Olin and I got started.
Yeah.
And we, you know, like we were such good friends, we'd, you know, I always sat right behind the bus driver. And then at that time, John was right behind me, and Stanley was right behind John.
You had assigned places in the bus.
Oh, it seemed like that happened, and that's the way it always was. Stanley always used to love to have the third seat on the left side of the bus, and then Von Olin talked him out of that, and he said, "You should always sit behind Dick."
Right.
But anyhow, pillaging was the thing when John and I would start hitting each other. One of us would be asleep, and the other guy would be like Cato in one of those Peter Sellers movies, and just all of a sudden jump all over him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we used to have a lot of fun with that. We gave the guys a lot of entertainment. One time we did this for about 300 miles. We got on the job that night, and neither one of us could play. Our arms were so sore.
In Tennessee, was it?
Oh, somewhere down there. We were going down south, yes.
Right. What's Von Olin doing these days, by the way?
John has a big band in Indianapolis.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's the hometown. We're both Hoosiers.
Right. I didn't know that, by the way.
Oh, yes.
You've settled in Detroit for the moment, though?
I settled in Detroit. One day I woke up and Johnny Trudell just said he got me and he won't let me leave.
Mm-hmm. Tell us what you're doing exactly these days in connection with Wayne State University and so on.
Well, I have the jazz band, or the lab jazz band program at Wayne State.
Right.
You know, and I teach there, and I try to teach the young guys how to play jazz, and I do a few other courses there, and of course, most of my time is with Johnny Trudell.
Mm-hmm.
At the Hyatt Regency. Which, by the way, Johnny has a new album out, which we're all very proud of.
Is there a sense of frustration on the part of a top-flight jazz instrumentalist with a big band history that you never achieve the same degree of prominence as other people who are the most gifted at what they do? If, for example, you were a great ball player or a great actor or something like that, everyone would know your name. But the people who have been the sidemen and the great bands of the modern era, really the most gifted musicians around, are to most of the public unknown. Is that ever a source, and as far as that goes, not very wealthy either. Are both of those things ever a source of frustration to you?
Oh, they can be at times. They really can. It seems like most of the guys who have had the good road experience and have good names usually will settle down in the town and get involved in the studios and,
mm-hmm.
you know, go that way of life. A lot of the guys make a tremendous amount of money doing record dates.
Connie Candoli is on the Tonight Show Orchestra now. Mm-hmm.
I'd say I don't know how many of those guys were ex-Kenton players.
Mm-hmm.
You see them all the time, especially of that era and that age.
Would you ever opt for something like that? I had an interview with Stan Getz about 5 or 6 or 7 years ago in Chicago, and he denounced that whole lifestyle. Not that he's doing so badly. He's married to a Swedish countess, and he has a villa in the south of Spain, so he's pretty well fixed, so it might be easy for him to say. Anyway, he said that he never had much respect for jazz musicians who went California, the way he put it. He said they play golf too much and it softens their brains.
I unfortunately do not agree with the man. Like you said, he's got a villa. I don't think he's ever, well, his early days, of course, with Woody, and then, of course, he was with Stan.
Right.
He was very young. In fact, Stanley, I think, at one time had a signed guardianship papers on him.
Right. When you say Stanley, that reminds me of something else, that only his friends could refer to him as Stanley, only someone who was close to Stan Kenton. It's just the reversal of what it would be with most people, where you use the full name if you don't know the guy and the shortened version if you're on a familiar basis. In fact, the fans and The not-quite fans called him Stan, and the people really close to him were the ones allowed to call him Stanley, as I understand it.
Yes, I always called him Stanley unless I was mad at him, then I'd say, Stan? Same way he always, you know, usually would call me, made a nickname for me called Dickus, which is the thing Von Olin came up, D. Barton came up with.
Right.
And that's what he usually called me. And every once in a while he'd get mad at me and say, Richard?
By the way, Dick, the final question, getting back to the female vocalists of the Kenton Band. Was I more or less on target when I said that Ann Richards is the most respected of the group, even though her tenure was the briefest?
I always felt that Ann was, well, she was one of the great singers. She is a fantastic singer.
Mm-hmm.
Ann was always one of my favorites. Then I always loved a little girl by the name of Jeannie Turner. She was also an excellent singer. She came like in the early 60s with the Mellophonian Band, did one album.
I don't remember that.
Yes, very good. Of course, and then what can you say about Chris? You know, Christy was just, she influenced a lot of vocalists today.
Yes, indeed.
You know, she was great. Of course, Anita was in the early days.
Mm-hmm.
But the band really reached the popularity. Of course, that's when Christy was a vocalist. You know, that's when they had Cooper and Vito Musso and Shelly Mams and Frasky, the whole bit.
Right. In fact, she's probably more associated with the Kenton Band than any other female singer.
Oh, yes. You know, that's always that way.
Dick, any further thoughts you want to leave us with about Stan Kenton?
There's one thing I like to always remember is when Duke passed away. And this is the way Stanley was. We were in just outside of Washington, D.C. We were coming up. We made a lunch stop somewhere in the South going up there. And he saw the newspaper headlines that Duke had just died. You know, he went beside the bus and he had quite a few tears and got on the bus. And he says, well, the man was a great gentleman. He'd had a great life. And he's one of the kings.
Mm-hmm.
And that night on the concert, you know, we had a play and everybody's waiting for Stanley to do something, you know, about Duke. And we played the first half of the concert. And in the second half of the concert, Stanley usually would play something to bring us back on, and he played A-Train. And he did it at such a slow, pretty tempo, which we would never do.
Right.
I mean, it was really a slow tempo. And the band got on the stand. And finally, all the saxophones came in, and of course, later on, the brass came in. And I looked down at Stanley, and he had tears in his eyes. And I got tears in my eyes. And at the end of it, he says, all he said was, we love you. And he went to the next thing, and he explained to the audience what a great man this was. I always will remember that.
Yeah. And you could so well apply the same thoughts, the same sentiments to Stan himself.
Oh.
Are you planning any kind of, like, retrospective concert or salute to Stan with the Sidemen of your era? Will there be anything like that?
No, nothing has been planned.
It still may occur, though.
Yes, it might possibly.
I hope there is something like that, and I hope we get to see and hear it. Come see us in person when you get a chance, Dick.
I'd love to.
Thank you, Dick.
Thank
Pleasure
you.
To talk with you. Dick Shearer of the Stan Kenton Band, 10:35.